Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Ty Bannerman. And despite what you may have just heard, we're not talking about April's news. We are, in fact, talking about poetry today. Whoever sent in the wrong file deserves your forgiveness and understanding. That would be me. Our state is rich in dramatic landscapes, deep history, and multifaceted culture, so perhaps it's no surprise that poetry thrives here. In fact, over the last decade, two of our U.S. Poets Laureate have had strong New Mexico connections. Joy Harjo, who served as laureate from 2019 to 2022, lived in the state and taught at UNM for many years. And Arthur Z, the current poet laureate, lives in Santa Fe. Today, we are asking how these poets have been affected by their time here and how they reflect the state's unique qualities in their work. And do you have a favorite poem written in or about New Mexico? We would love it if you could share a line or two with us and why you find it so compelling. You can use, you can send us an email, letstalk@kunm.org, or call in live during the show at 505-277-5866. So joining me live via Zoom today, we have Arthur Z, current poet laureate of the United States, first Asian American to hold the post. Good morning, Arthur. Thank you so much for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for inviting me.
And in the studio with us this morning, Michelle Otero, former poet laureate of Albuquerque. Appreciate you coming in today as well.
Thanks, Ty. Good to be here.
A bit later on, we are also going to hear interviews with former U.S. poet laureate Joy Harjo and current poet laureate of the Navajo Nation, Jake Skeets. That's right. All poets laureate today, except me, feeling maybe a little intimidated. So, Arthur, I'd like to start with you. So you were born in New York City. Can you tell me how you came to New Mexico?
It's a roundabout way. So as you said, I was born in New York City. Like many Asian Americans, I grew up with a lot of pressure to do something in science. And I enrolled at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I wrote my first poem there. And needless to say, I needed to go somewhere else, and I transferred to the University of California at Berkeley. And before I graduated from UC Berkeley, I had the good fortune to work with the poet Josephine Miles, who was my mentor. And I told Josephine I didn't really want to go to graduate school. I wanted to go somewhere in America I'd never been before. And she said, try New Mexico and try Santa Fe. She said, it's really beautiful. And she said, I think you'll find it inspiring. She gave me the names of two people, and I literally came with a knapsack and my curiosity and got a job as a poet in the schools.
Wow, a poet in the schools?
Yes, in 1972, Stanley Noyes worked for the New Mexico Arts Division, and they were assembling a group of poets to work in public schools and on reservations throughout the state. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, when I joined that program, I worked in it for 10 years from 1973 to 83, Joy Harjo was also in that program. So oh, wow. We go back a long ways.
You're kind of mirroring each other in a way.
Yes.
So when you came to New Mexico, and since then, how has the landscape and cultures of New Mexico influenced your work?
I was really excited to come to New Mexico. It was so different from any part of America I had ever been before. And I was immediately struck by the cultural diversity. Mm-hmm. Some of the first people I met included a Navajo jeweler and a Pueblo photographer. As an Asian American, I felt an immediate affinity to Native Americans here in the state. But again, the whole cultural diversity. I loved working in Spanish-speaking high schools. And the landscape and light, as we all know, are amazing and awesome. And I think that sense of light and distance affected my poetry in the sense that over time, I started to use longer and longer lines. Another thing I loved about Santa Fe and New Mexico is the human scale, really. It's not like being in a gigantic city with millions of people, and it's much more comfortable interacting with people, and there are so many creative people here. So those have been important influences.
Right. So the poem Salt Song from your collection Sightlines really stood out to me. Would you be able to share that with us?
I'd be delighted to. Salt Song. Sunnis make shrines on the way to a lake where I emerge, and Miwoks gather me out of pools along the Pacific. The cheetah thirsts for me. And when you sprinkle me on ribeye, you have no idea how I balance silence with thunder in crystal. You dream of butterfly hunting in Madagascar, spelunking through caves echoing with dripping stalactites. And you don't see how I yearn to shimmer in orange aurora against flame. Look at me in your hand. In Egypt, I scrub the bodies of kings and queens. In Pakistan, I zigzag upward through 26 miles of tunnels before drawing my first breath in sunlight. If you heat a kiln to 2,380 degrees and scatter me inside, I vaporize and bond with clay. In this unseen moment, a potter prays because my pattern is out of his hands. And when I touch your lips, you salivate. And when I dissolve on your tongue, your hair rises. Ozone unlocks. A single stroke of lightning sizzles to earth.
That is wonderful. Can you tell me, how did that poem develop?
Well, as some background, I guess I want to start by saying that I was thinking about voice in poetry and how so often poems are powered by using the first person. I did this, I did that. And one morning I thought, what if I have different things that are appear to be objects, but could be alive in the world, and I gave them voice. So I wrote a first poem called Lichen Song in the voice of a piece of lichen. And one day, you know, the sources of poetry are everywhere. One day I was just sitting at the table grabbing a shaker of salt, and I thought, oh, what if that salt could speak to a human being? What would it say? So that perspective really came from thinking of trying to extend or expand the possibilities of voice in poetry.
Now, on the page in the book, right below that poem, there's one line about plutonium waste. Can you tell me, how did you juxtapose those two kind of concepts?
I think living in northern New Mexico, I'm always aware of the nuclear age. For many years, I lived in Hakona in the Pauke Valley. And if I looked west up on the mesa, I could see the water tower of Los Alamos. I also remember visiting White Sands for the first time and thinking how beautiful and remarkable that landscape is. And then also realizing, oh, that's where the first atom bomb was detonated. Trinity site is there. So there's, for me, the sense of even in the most beautiful natural landscape, we are still a part of the nuclear age. So that reference to plutonium is there just as a kind of grounding or trigger.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the WIP site, the Waste Isolation Pilot Yes. Plant, is a vast salt deposit. So I thought that was very interesting to kind of go from this journey of salt to a place where we bury what we can't deal with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it looks like we have a call from Joe and Ellen in Albuquerque who have a line of their own poetry that they would like to read for us. Hi, Joe and Ellen.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, you two.
Good morning. Anyway, we are active in poetry fixed and free. Anyway, this one, just a little bit. I wrote a little bit last night, and it goes like this. New Mexico, New Mexico, this is where I live. I can live. I used to live in Minnesota, but now here in New Mexico, flowers, sunshine, and the weeds that come after the rain, I have gained. Thank you.
Thank you. I love that. Quite joyful.
Like this.
And Ellen, did you have one as well?
Yes, I do. I got one right here. New Mexico, the land of enchantment, where the sun shines 310 days out of the year. We are surrounded by so many things, flowers, weeds, but most of it, we love our green chili. Mm. So let's celebrate the land of enchantment, New Mexico.
All right. Well, thank you, Ellen and Joe. Really appreciate you calling in. You guys have a wonderful day and enjoy some green chili out there. There's something just wonderful about a celebratory poem. just basking in the joy of where you are. So, Arthur, going back to you, you also do a lot of translation. In fact, your latest project is Transient Worlds on Translating Poetry, which is described as a personal guide to translating global poetry. I find the concept of translation in poetry really fascinating because, in my mind, I tend to think of the words as so specific a product of their language, and then the concepts so specific a product of their culture. How do you approach bringing a poem from another language and viewpoint to an English-speaking audience?
Thank you. There are so many ways to approach this subject. I don't know where to begin. As the 25th Poet Laureate of the United States, I've made poetry and translation my signature project because I believe translation is a deeply humanizing act. It makes the ancient, contemporary, the foreign accessible, and the spiritual, emotional, and intellectual interior of our lives universal. So translation builds bridges and builds community. On the first hand, the immediate impulse, like you say, is, oh, it's impossible to translate. How can you carry something over from a language so different into English? But on the other hand, when you think about how all poems and stories come together on a human level, if you think of the powerful experience contained in poetry, then given the limitations of one language and another language, it's still fascinating to explore how to attempt bringing a poem from another language into English with a voice that's contemporary and alive. And as Poet Laureate, I know many people feel that poetry is intimidating, it's difficult or scary, and really poetry is for everyone. And I think one way to make poetry more accessible is to use poetry in translation, saying, here's a poem by Pablo Neruda in Spanish that's fantastic. You can read it. And in my book, I present two translations, not one, to show that there's no definitive way to translate. And sometimes I invite the reader to make their own translation. Mm. So I'm really trying to explore creatively language and how you can carry experience over from one language into another.
I mean, it seems to me from the way you're describing it that you view the translation itself as a creative work.
I do, absolutely. And my personal background is when I was a student at UC Berkeley years ago, the translations of Chinese poetry I read felt really antiquated. Mm. The voices sounded like they were people speaking 100 years earlier. And I thought as a young poet, I want to bring these poems, which I loved, over 1,000 years old, in a voice that's contemporary and alive, to give a reader in America a chance to experience that. So I learned by writing out the ancient characters one by one in my own handwriting and personalizing the language. And then stepping inside those poems, I felt like I could recreate them, not literally, I try and be faithful to what's literally there, but to carry that essential experience over into English. And that's really exciting, and it's a service for everyone, I think.
So there's one poem that you've translated in Transient Worlds that you mentioned to me that seemed very interesting because it is a translation from Dene, but it's also a very minimalist visual poem. Can you describe this work to us and how you went about the translation?
Yes. Yeah, so the poem is a visual poem, so it's untranslatable, and it's comprised of two Navajo words, and excuse me for, I'm sure, probably mispronouncing them, but hosho, which means like beauty, balance, harmony, and hokso, which is imbalance. Mm. And the poet Orlando White, who listens to Lee, who teaches at Diné Community College, created this visual poem. And the two words are visually connected, where hokso, ending in the O, is turned upside down and is connected to hojo. And the act of translation is simply a footnote where the two words are given a definition. But in this particular zone of my book, I talk about how language is embedded in culture. And if you just think of hojo as beauty or balance, it risks making that really powerful word and idea in Diné a cliche. And hojo really is beauty, but it's through interconnection with everything that's visible and invisible. So I talk about each of the poems I select. There's the translation, and here a listener is just going to have to imagine two Navajo words connected visually and turned at an angle. So you don't read it left to right, you're reading it from top left to lower right. And to me, visually, it's saying, look, the world is out of balance. And you can see it right here in two words.
Wow. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning. We are going to pause here for just a moment. You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We're having a bit of a poet Laura Palooza this morning. Do you have questions for our guests about their process or how New Mexico has inspired their work? You can call in at 505-277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Trees, Water, and People, a local nonprofit rebuilding New Mexico's climate resilience and forest health through indigenous stewardship. Information about their work supporting community-led restoration efforts at twp.org.
KUNM appreciates all the listeners who have donated vehicles to support essential programs like this one. Thanks to all the generous vehicle donors who took the initiative to keep KUNM going strong. KUNM, powered by you.
I'm Rachel Abrams, host of The Daily. Every day, New York Times journalists bring you deeper into the story. Our reporters on the ground, around the world, take you there for behind-the-scenes insights, giving you more context, more voices, more of what you need to understand the news. Every weekday on The Daily from The New York Times.
Tune in for The Daily weekday evenings at 6:30 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We were just speaking to U.S. Poet Laureate Arthur Z, who currently resides in Santa Fe. And we have received an email from Bill Nevins, who I believe lives in Albuquerque. And he has a few lines of a poem to share with us called Una Limpia, or Burque Days. He says it is dedicated to the cherished memory of Don Lorenzo Candelaria, of Cornelio Candelaria Organics, who taught me so much about life and who tried so hard to teach me adobe bricks, to make adobe bricks. So he says, cleansing the memory of peeling chiles, stringing ristras, celebrating the iguana and the santana, I wend this road many years on, whistling gabacho gypsy over the hill, knowing that there may be no fond Spanish goodbye song, as Stephen Dedalus remarked in Ulysses, we walk through ourselves, but always meeting ourselves. And I remember those tears, those laughs, ay, Dios míos, those South Valley sunsets. And that's about half the poem. It's a wonderful poem. See if you can look it up. Thank you for sharing that, Bill. So proceeding Arthur Z as U.S. Poet Laureate. Joy Harjo served three terms in the position from 2019 to 2022. She was the first Native American to receive the honor, and she is also a musician and recently released her new album, Insomnia and Seven Steps to Grace, through Smithsonian Folkways. Here is an excerpt from the track, Rabbit is Up to Tricks.
In a world long before this one, there was enough for everyone until somebody got out of line. We heard it was rabbit fooling around with clay in the wind. Everybody was tired of his tricks and no one would play with him, and he was lonely in this world. It's a rabbit thought to make a person. And when he blew into the mouth of that crude figure to see what would happen, the clay man stood up. Rabbit showed the clay man how to steal a chicken. The clay man obeyed. Then he showed him how to steal corn. The clay man obeyed. Then he showed him how to steal someone else's wife, and that clay man obeyed. Rabbit felt important and powerful. And clay man felt important and powerful. And once that clay man started, he could not stop. Once he took that chicken, he wanted all the chickens. Once he took that corn, he wanted all the corn. And once he took that wife, well, he wanted all the wives. He was insatiable.
That was Joy Harjo's track, Rabbit Is Up to Tricks, from her new album, Insomnia and Seven Steps to Grace. I spoke to Joy Harjo last week about her work, her experience in New Mexico, and the new album itself.
You are from Oklahoma, but you have some pretty deep connections to New Mexico. Tell me about how you came to the state and your experience of it.
Yes, I came to New Mexico when I was 16 years old. And came out to go to Indian school in Santa Fe, the Institute of American Indian Arts, with the help of, it was called Eight Northern Pueblos Talent Search. They helped me get into University of New Mexico. I started out pre-med one semester, went back into studio art and worked and started writing poetry.
So it sounds like New Mexico was important in your transition to becoming, I guess, a professional poet. How did that pivot come about?
Well, I'd always been into art. I grew up around music. My mother was writing songs when I was very young, and we had the best country swing musicians jamming at our house. But I was an artist. I had pieces in art shows in sixth grade, a couple of pieces. And then the poetry, I was working in Santa Fe. Actually, I worked at a gas station on Cerrios, and I wore a mini skirt that I made out of the Shell oil colors. And cars lined up because I would put the gas in, check the tires. And they changed the name to Mini Serve Gas Mart. And then I went to University of New Mexico pre-med because I was in that nursing assistant program. And I worked at St. Vincent's and I loved the work. And I decided, well, I was always interested in healing. But then poetry, I mean, the art, it all fits into, I think, you could include it under healing ultimately.
So you view it as a healing practice?
Essentially.
And just kind of more generally, how has the state of New Mexico influenced your work?
A lot. I mean, I didn't start writing poetry until I was influenced by New Mexico, by the light. I started writing poetry when I was a student at University of New Mexico and hearing a lot of native poets. There was a whole consciousness going on in the very early 70s that, well, you know, what is American literature? What is American music? Well, it includes everybody. It's not just creativity that comes from Europe. And the poetry came out of being around people like Leslie Marmon Silko, and Simon Ortiz. And I had my first poetry teacher, David Johnson. He's still around there. Wonderful human being and wonderful poet and teacher.
I know you reference New Mexico landscapes in poems like Morning Prayer. You talk about the Sangre de Cristos. And do you find that as you travel and you've moved to different places, do they still come up in poetry or things that you think about?
Oh, they still do. I mean, I have a lot of family there too. You know, I mean, it's kind of, for me, it's part of my poetry origin story. You know, I figure that I'm also still a citizen, you know,
still allied with the state of New Mexico.
Well, let's talk a bit about insomnia and the seven steps to grace. What is the relationship between your written poetry and the performance? How do you bring them together?
I guess that has started happening with Poetic Justice, you know, and we started crafting music around the poetry. And some of the earliest tapes, I sound almost monochrome. But now I've moved into singing some, speaking some, doing half and half. So for me, the poetry and the song, and poetry has roots in song. Although if I'm writing a poem, I have a different headset than if I'm writing a song, because there's other elements that you're, you know, using and depending on.
So when you were writing the title track, which existed as a written poem first, Insomnia and Seven Steps to Grace, did you have a musical feeling as you were writing it, or did that come later?
I always have. Even my prose, when I'm reading something prose I've written, people think it's poetry. It's like, no, this is a story, you know, and some of the poems are story. But there's always been a musical. Like I say, it's related. Poetry is related. Lyrical narrative is related to writing lyrics. And so when I'm writing poetry, I'm always aware of similar things in writing music. You're aware of rhythm, even pitch, although I will go at things a little different with a poem.
So you're Poet Laureate of the United States for 2019 to 2022. You were serving also during a pretty tumultuous time for the country, straddling that first Trump and Biden administration in January 6th. What was the experience of kind of being the poetic representation of the country at that time?
Well, most of what I did, or a lot of us did, was online, on Zoom. And yet we were going through several different crises. I mean, of also cultural, social crises globally and locally and nationally. And so it's during those times that people come to poetry. So the poetry sites were jamming, you know, all over the country. But it was particularly noticeable how people were coming to poetry in ways that they probably really hadn't in my lifetime.
In a time of conflict, like, poetry almost thrives from your perspective.
Well, everyone needs tools, you know, tools. And I think of poetry as a kind of tool. I mean, it's art. I think of it kind of as a poem, like as like a field of time and memory and being. It makes a lot of connections. If it's a good poem, you come out, you're changed. You know, you understand or see the world in a different way, or it's the door opens in a little bit different way.
And on this album, it seems like a lot of the tracks are about kind of navigating some pretty dark times, Rabbit up to his tricks, creating this rapacious, greedy figure that goes about plundering the world. And I feel like this thread is all through this album, this idea of like, how do you live in a world where this kind of conflict is ongoing and maybe not resolvable?
That's exactly, you've got it. The songs were picked, and songs and poems were picked precisely to be helpful as we navigate these times. I wanted it specifically, you know, to say, okay, we can make it through. We've been through this. And that's what Native people say. We always say, yeah, we've seen all this before. You know, we've seen it before, and we'll get through it. And so that's, the album is part of that. It's like, okay, there's fear, there's rabbit figure, you know, who is, you know, rapacious and hungry and will steal everything. Just, you know, perhaps the world ends here. The only poem, we kind of did it as like a palate cleanser, but right in the middle, perhaps the world ends here. It's like, okay, why don't we sit down at a kitchen table together and just talk to each other and eat together? And because that connects all of us.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time to chat today. Is there anything that you feel like we should touch on before our time?
I just want to thank KUNM for supporting my music all these years, because yeah, I hear, you know, people will send me a note, or, you know, will say, yeah, we hear you all the time on KUNM.
Well, you have a wonderful day.
Okay, you too. Take care.
That was former poet laureate Joy Harjo talking about her new album, Insomnia, and the Seven Steps to Grace. Our next laureate this morning is Michelle Otero, who was Albuquerque's poet laureate from 2018 to 2020, and will also be serving as the Aldo and Estella Leopold Writer-in-Residence this summer. Thank you for joining us in the studio today, Michelle.
Thanks for having me.
So I understand that you have a poem that you'd like to start with today.
I do. So it's called There's a Hole in the Ground in Chimayo. There's a hole in the ground in Chimayo, filled with sacred dirt, a santuario around the hole where the faithful leave crutches, wheelchairs, and walk. I thought the miracle was that the hole never empties, no matter how many grandfathers fill paper cups or mothers hand scoop into old butter containers, dirt will always be there for the next and the next. My husband broke into our ground with a pickaxe, post hole digger, chipper, hoe. I think of all the things that could go wrong. Errant toe, open shoe, never mow in flip-flops. All the ways I show up, unprepared, unshaven, unwaxed. This brain forgets. Did she already tell me her father died? Did I already know about their miscarriage, new home, baby, stroke? I try to be a good friend. There is only so much coffee, brain cell, neurotransmission. I am willing my brain to empty, empty. I have never thought of nothing. I follow this then that meditation leaf down the stream, forget to place a thought, ask the leaves back upstream. Desert leaves are so tiny. That's not the miracle in Chimayo. There's a man with a Home Depot bucket who fills the hole throughout the day. The earth itself is sacred.
I love that. I also thought that perhaps that hole was magically refilling itself.
Were you today years old
when you went? I did learn it before.
Okay, but, okay.
But there
I'm sure
was
there's
a time.
All those people out there going like,
yeah,
oh.
Exactly. No, it's the nature of the dirt itself.
Yes.
So we have actually a question from Joni in Santa Fe. They say, what do they think is the difference between a poem they sit down to craft and one that comes to them and they have to sit down and write?
That's a great question. I think sometimes there are these lightning strikes or where it'll be, you know, maybe something somebody said or just a beautiful moment that the universe gives you, like your neighbors, our neighbor's peacock flying into our yard and the neighbor not being able to find it. And then ringing the bell, and there's a little boy who's like, have you seen my peacock? You got to write about that.
Did you immediately run to your laptop?
I did. I was like, I think I'll remember this. I did help him try to find the peacock. Peacocks can fly. Who knew? I didn't know this. So I think of those things as like the poem that is kind of shaking you and saying you should spend some time with us. And then there's other times where, you know, I'm part of a poetry group, this amazing community called The Matrix, and we meet every Friday via Zoom from 7:30 to 9:30 in the morning. And that's the deliberate practice of creating a poem. So we chit-chat for about 30 minutes. Somebody brings in a poem, and we talk about craft and what potential prompts could be. And then we go off camera and mute ourselves and each of us spends half an hour writing a poem. So I think about that as like the kind of sitting down and being really intentional with what you have in front of you. Mm-hmm. And that feels more like kind of exercising a muscle. But I think, and now I'm going to mix metaphors. What a poem. I think it also kind of primes the pump. So when those other when those moments do arrive, when there is a peacock or a lightning strike, mm-hmm. then I've been working the muscle and I can more naturally kind of sit down and use it.
So it's like one is going to the gym and the other is running the marathon.
There you go. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
I didn't mix my metaphors. So your poetry, as we just heard, is really deeply rooted in New Mexico, both in the landscape and then the culture and then your own family. What does New Mexico mean to you?
Oh, everything. I think it means more and more as the rest of the country feels so hard.
Yeah.
So when I feel despair about so many things that are happening in other places and swirling around us, we feel like this sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And I also say that recognizing that so many people here in this place are struggling as well. And I feel like we have some resources that are being deliberately like directed toward people who are vulnerable. Mm-hmm. It's not enough. And I feel like there are a lot of people who are trying and doing their best. So that's one thing, like sanctuary. It also means it's the place that my family has called home, or a branch of my family, the Otero side of my family, has called home for generations and generations. I used to say, like, oh, I'm a 10th generation New Mexico, which felt like a lot of time to me. And then I just remember one of my Pueblo friends saying, like, you all just came and sat on the couch. Like, you haven't. And
you're short-timing.
Oh, yeah, that's not actually, it's a long time in the context of the United States. Sure. In terms of like human history. It's like, yeah, we did just kind of come and sit on the couch. So, to me, it's also a place where people have been in long and deep connection with a particular landscape and with a particular place, and not an easy landscape. Mm-hmm. And probably a landscape that's getting harder because of drought and climate change. So it's a place that requires cooperation of us. And I feel like that's kind of built into us. So that shows up. And then there's the very real presence of the U.S.-Mexico border, mm-hmm. where I grew up. So I grew up in Deming. Mm-hmm. And just 30 miles north of that border. So I think like that landscape, even though I didn't have as much of an awareness of it when I was pressed right up against it growing up, it that also shows up a lot. So just a place that can hold such complexity and possibility and pain, mm-hmm. And you know, wildlife and how you have to pay such close attention to find the nuance in it. Because I think to the untrained eye, it's just like everything's brown, and yeah. It's like, well, then yeah, this place probably isn't for you.
Right, absolutely. Yeah. We do have to take a brief pause. But listeners still have the opportunity to call in, maybe share a line or two of your favorite New Mexico poem. You can reach us at 505-277-5866. Email letstalk@kunm.org. We will be right back.
Support comes from Western National Parks, presenting the feature-length documentary Out There, a National Park Story, May 21st at 7 p.m. at the Kimo Theater. Tickets at cabq.gov/KIMO/events.
KUNM programming is made possible by supporting members from Santa Fe, Los Alamos, and many other communities, large and small. No matter where you call home, thank you for your generosity. KUNM, powered by you.
States are already making moves to eliminate minority voting districts following the U.S. Supreme Court's decision that crippled the Voting Rights Act. Native voting rights advocates are closely watching ongoing efforts to redraw state electoral maps and working to preserve Native voices as the midterm elections draw near. We'll hear more on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. We've been speaking to Michelle Otero, former Albuquerque Poet Laureate, and this year's Aldo and Estelle Leopold Writer in Residence. We were just talking about what New Mexico kind of means to you, and there was just a lot of, I feel like a lot of deep context is what came through there. And you mentioned how sometimes people come here and all they see is the color brown, and that reminded me of your poem,
oh, yeah.
The Color Brown. So can you tell me about the importance of brownness in New Mexico?
Oh, yeah. I think there are so many shades of brown. It's and I think it takes patience and patience and curiosity to find the beauty in it. So I think some folks come here. First of all, I think it's silly to go any place and expect it to be just like the place you left. Just stay where you were.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So there's that. I'll just get that out of the way. But I think, you know, there are so many different ways to experience that color. So whether it's an adobe brick or or, you know, my mother's hands or my own hands and how my own color has changed as I've gotten smarter about the time I spend in the sun. Mm. and as I get older and how the lines in my face kind of change and inhabit brown in a different way. And I think just, you know, in terms of human beings, like we are a place that I've always grown up around or have always been around people who look like me. And that's not a given when I travel other places. Like it wasn't a given when I went far away to school. Uh-huh. And so I find when I'm in a place where I don't see other brown faces, I feel far from home. So there's also something about that color that feels very much like a homecoming. So it's like, it's the earth, it's the people, it's kind of like the fine dust. It's the thing that gives us life, mm-hmm. that we can, you know, if we're in deep relationship with it, we can summon beans and corn and squash. So there's like so much possibility in that color.
I love that idea of the magic of the brownness.
Yeah.
We have an email from Larry in Placitas, and he says...
I know Larry. Yeah. If it's the Larry I'm thinking of, yeah.
He says, hello, fellow poet colleagues. I'm a 90-year-old poet born in Roswell and lifelong lover and resident of New Mexico. I've devoted my life to promoting poetry publications, performances, and recordings. With no university or other publishers interested in my work, I've had to edit, format, and pay for the printing of my books using Amazon. And I simply send my books to friends and literary acquaintances who I think will enjoy them. But actually getting my books in bookstores that are available from order on Ingram's Distributing is daunting. What can we do to help each other get our work out beyond the local, if it's truly deserving?
Mm, wow, that's such a big question. So Larry Goodell is a treasure. He is like so generous with other poets and such a lively and incredible reader. That's just so fun to mm-hmm. hear him. And he is being really humble in his remarks because he actually does a lot to promote and support the work of other poets. So I think one way is... you know, technology can be a double-edged sword and in some ways can drive us apart. But I think in this instance, like I have people who are listening from around the country and in other parts of the world, and this will live in the archives. So I think that's one way to get like the spoken word aspect. Mm-hmm. I think radio is a wonderful medium that helps us to kind of bypass the Amazons. there's also bookshop.org. I believe, and if you're not using Bookshop as an alternative to Amazon, you should be. So if you go to Bookshop and you order from them, you can select a local bookstore that benefits from that purchase. Oh. So it takes a little longer, but, you know, poems are worth waiting for. and then I think that there's still, you know, we should be reading and buying each other's books. So when those words are out in the world, we should, you know, support our friends and friends of friends who are writing and doing the hard work of putting things out into the universe.
So it seems very much like building community is
absolutely
the important thing here.
Yeah, that's the other thing I get from New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Yeah, community.
So, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you, going back to your poetry, you know, a lot of your work moves freely between Spanish and English. How did you make that decision to use both languages?
So I grew up in a family where my parents spoke Spanish to talk about us, but they didn't teach us. So there were certain words that I just knew. I was like, oh, when my mom says that word, that means I'm in trouble. Like, and I knew if it ended in the that like she was talking about me because mm-hmm. I'm the only girl. and then there were just certain things that I could say, like if I was visiting somebody or an elder, like, hola, ¿cómo está? Bien, ¿y usted? You know, me llamo Michelle. And there's a long history of colonization behind why folks of my parents' generation didn't teach Spanish to my generation. And you'll meet lots of Garcias and Sanchezes and Oteros who don't know our mother tongue. So I think once I did learn Spanish, I lived in Oaxaca, Mexico for 2 years, partly on a Fulbright fellowship and partly because I just didn't want to leave. It was so amazing. My Spanish was so hard fought that it, and I was finally able to like move with ease between the languages that I, it just shows up. It's how I talk. It's how I think. Mm-hmm. And I think even people who don't speak Spanish, or like, you know, haven't had the privilege of being able to go live in Mexico for 2 years. If you grew up hearing it, it's in you. It's, and there's kind of a, I don't know, like a base from which things can grow, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, we have access to that, and we code switch even if we're not completely fluent in the other, in Spanish.
Well, thank you so much for talking to me today, Michelle. Our final laureate of the day is Jake Skeets. He is the current poet laureate of the Navajo Nation, although he currently resides in Oklahoma. He will be returning to New Mexico for the Santa Fe Literary Festival, and next year he will begin teaching at UNM. I spoke to Jake yesterday about his work, and the interview begins with Jake reading his poem, Drunk Town.
Drunk Town. Indian, Eden, open, tooth, bone, bruise, this town split into. Clocks ring out as train horns. Each hour hand drags into a screech, iron, steel, iron. The minute hand runs its fingers through the outcrops. Drunk town. Drunk is the punch, town a gasp. In between the letters are boots crushing tumbleweeds. A tractor tire backing over a man's skull. Men around here only touch when they fall in a back seat, go for the foul with 30 seconds left, hug their sons after high school graduation, open a keg, stab my uncle 47 times behind a liquor store. A bar called Eddie sits at the end of the world. By the tracks, drunk men get some sleep. My father's uncle tries to get some under a long bed truck. The truck backs up to go home. I arrange my father's boarding school soap bones on white space and call it a poem. Like my father, I come upon death, staggering into the house with beer on the breath. Mule deer splintered in barbed tendon, gray highway veins narrow, push, pull under teal and red hills. A man is drunk staggering into northbound lanes. Dollar bills for his index and ring fingers. Sands glitter with broken bottles. Greens, deep blues, clears, and golds. This place is white cone. Greasewood, Sanders, Whitewater, Bread Springs, Crystal, Chinle, Noslini, and Indian Wells, and all muddy roads lead from Gallup. The sky places an arm on the near heels. On the shoulder, dark gray, almost blue, bleeds into greens, blue greens, turquoise into hazy blue, pure blue, no gray or gold or oil black seeped through. If I stare long enough, I see my uncle in a mirror, the bottle caps we use for eyes. An owl has a skeleton of three letters. O twists into L. The burrowing owl burrows under dead cactus. Feathers fall on horseweed and skull bone blown open.
I think that's an incredible poem. Yeah.
Thank you.
And I understand that you are from New Mexico, but have recently been teaching in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. You are returning for the Santa Fe Literary Festival. How does that feel?
It feels great. I really do cherish any time I can travel back to New Mexico. So this will be my first time attending the Santa Fe Lit Fest. So I'm really excited to meet the other authors and, of course, talk with folks about, you know, my work. Really excited also for the food. I mean, you can't not enjoy the restaurants in Santa Fe whenever I'm there.
So the poem you read, Drunk Town, is from your book, Eye Bottle Dark with a Mouthful of Flowers. Yeah. That book really centers on Gallup, New Mexico, portraying it as a deeply conflicted, often violent and seemingly cruel place. Can you tell me about your experience in writing the book and how you interact with Gallup today?
Yeah. I mean, yes, it's very a very conflicted place. I have a very ambivalent relationship with Gallup. Again, I consider it my hometown, right? As a border town, it carries so much of my childhood, right? I feel like my memories of Gallup and growing up are sort of divided. I mean, on some ends, I have very happy memories in Gallup. On others, not so much. And I feel like this is not unique to me. I feel like most Navajo and or Native folk around the area sort of realize the power and the danger of Gallup. The writing the book itself was actually quite a traumatic experience because I had to, part of my process was research. And so I began reading a lot about lives lost in Gallup, about the racial tensions. Having to sort of talk to my parents about how they experienced Gallup too was actually quite interesting. And historically, the town itself has been a place of violence for many Native folk. So having to just deal with it and reconcile it on the page was rather difficult.
How do you immerse yourself in that kind of deep, dark pain and then go about your day-to-day life?
I do feel like I compartmentalize my life a lot. I don't make my entire life about the work, right? I do try to make sure that I'm having some type of balance. I have to very much separate my personal life from the writing. But I feel like it's what writers do. I feel like writers do often contextualize sort of the darkness that surrounds us a lot of the time. And I feel like it is sort of this extra responsibility that you do place upon yourself as a writer. But, you know, if not us, who, right?
And your newest book is Horses. Can you tell me about it and how it came about?
Yeah, for sure. So Horses, I began writing during the pandemic when I was living in Salie, Arizona. I was getting a lot of inquiries about and solicitations to write about apocalypse or the end of the world. That was sort of on our mind. And the book, I really started from there, from that kind of like thinking of like, what would the end of the world look like? And I wanted to sort of see if there's a sort of measurable way I could sort of see climate change happening on the Navajo Nation. So I talk a lot about it in the book. So I talk about sand dune migration, drought, overgrazing, those types of things that impact the Navajo Nation. And the book itself begins with a poem that is a response to a tragic event that happened in 2018 when nearly 200 feral horses were found dead in a dried up stock pond. You know, these horses were so desperate for water, right? They're literally digging into the mud and unfortunately became trapped. Basically becomes a meditation about climate change on the Navajo Nation, what it looks like, and sort of like placing me at the center of it as a sort of like observer, someone who's noticing and trying to orient, you know, how do we talk about joy and things like that when we're sort of surrounded by all this darkness? So it became an experiment in how do I write a joyful poem? So I feel like it was necessary work. And I'm really excited that the book is out now.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to me today. I know you've got a very busy schedule. Can you just remind us again where and when you'll be reading in Santa Fe?
So I'll be in conversation with Ada Limón on Saturday at 4 p.m. as part of the Santa Fe International Literary Festival.
Happy traveling.
Thank you so much.
That was Jake Skeets, current Poet Laureate of the Navajo Nation. I am here with Michelle Otero as well. I wondered, do you have any upcoming events that listeners could come and see you at? Or
yeah, I have I have a few things that aren't happening here in Albuquerque. So in June, I will be facilitating the Gozo Creative Workshop. So Gozo is Spanish for joy, and it's a creative feast for women and non-binary writers in Oaxaca. So we we write in the mornings, and then in the afternoons we create art with a Oaxacan woman artist. And I co-founded that in 2022 with my friend and colleague, Suzanne Barbazat, who's an amazing guide, tour guide. So I'll be doing that in June, then visiting Vermont College of Fine Arts and Cal Arts at the end of June, and then in residence for Aldo Leopold in July.
Okay, well, that is the music. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you for all the calls and emails. Great poetry has been shared today. It's been an absolute honor to speak to my guests today, poets Arthur Z, Joy Harjo, Michelle Otero, and Jake Skeets. You can comment on this show by email at letstalk@kunm.org or find us on your favorite social media, including YouTube, where you can watch the show with your eyes. Just look up at KUNM Radio. Audio from today's show will be streaming at kunm.org soon. You can also get the Let's Talk New Mexico podcast from Apple and Spotify. Come back next week when Taylor Velasquez will be talking about the Big Brothers and Big Sisters program. Our engineer today was Marino Spencer. Taylor Velasquez took your calls. Megan Kamrick produced the show. I'm Ty Bannerman. Thanks for listening.